Good morning and welcome to our program, Our American Heritage. I am the host, Arch Hunter, and it's our desire at American Heritage to explore in depth the American experience from its beginning to the present. Understanding the history of this great nation is paramount in understanding our greatness. And today we're pleased to welcome back Dave Stahl. Dave, welcome and thank you for coming back to the program today.
Oh, I appreciate it, Arch. Thanks. Good to be with you guys again.
It's always a pleasure to have you, and it's always a pleasure, listeners, as I said, because Dave is my wife's favorite guest, and she just loves to listen to Dave's knowledge and sharing it with us. Dave has been a friend of mine, I guess, now for over 10 years. He's retiring from education this year after 37 years, and no, he's not going to retire from education at all because he has way too much to give and offer with his love and passion for our country and his knowledge and everything that he is involved in. So, Dave, you were talking about Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers and the beginning of the releasing of those papers through the Washington Post and the New York Times, and you were just getting into that fascinating, sad but fascinating time period of the plumbers. So if you'd like to pick up there and explain a little bit about background of the plumbers and who they were, what they were trying to accomplish, and why were they even all together as a group?
Yeah, absolutely. The plumbers were a group of what I would consider to be misfits, and certainly not anybody that would be a friend to the Constitution of the United States or to law enforcement in the United States, as their record later proved. All but one of them ended up going to prison. Most of them were in the administration of Richard Nixon. And they eventually are going to bring about the downfall of, President of the United States in what Ellsberg went on to state in the papers or in his analysis later on, what he considered to be the most critical decision in American political history. And, Arch, I had never really thought of it in that way. I mean, what happened with Nixon and Watergate and what has subsequently happened and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I kind of had to stand back and take a real deep thought about that as to whether, it was just more hyperbole or, actually it was had credence to it. And I've come to the conclusion that it did have credence because I honestly think that our distrust of American government and mm-hmm. politicians basically started at that point in time.
Oh, I agree with you. Yes.
When, And I think back to what Nixon had said, in regards to Walter Cronkite and what Johnson had said in regards to Walter Cronkite, who was obviously the most trusted newsman in the United States at that time. But when he came out and basically said the Vietnam War was not winnable and it was not being fought in a way that could even be considered to be winnable. If you remember, Johnson said, well, if I've lost Walter Cronkite, I've mm-hmm. lost the American public. And then Nixon, just exacerbated that with his directions to his men to shut these guys up no matter what it took. So if I could, I would like to just read an analysis here that I've put together.
Sure, please.
After studying some things and whatnot. This dates back to when Ellsberg left the RAND Corporation. He went to work as a senior research associate at MIT. And in 2002, he wrote this about the Vietnam War. And I will just quote him here. He said it was no more a civil war after 1955 or 1960 than it had been during the U.S.-supported French attempt at colonial reconquest. A war in which one side was entirely equipped and paid by a foreign power, which dictated the nature of the local regime in its own interest, was not a civil war. To say that we had interfered in what is really a civil war, as most American academic writers and even liberal critics of the war do to this day, simply screened a more painful reality and was as much a myth as the earlier official one of aggression from the North. In terms of the UN Charter and of our own avowed ideals, it was a war of foreign aggression, i.e. American aggression. Mm-hmm. When you read about what was actually happening. And here again, our time does not allow us to really get into that too much. But Nixon ordered the plumbers to discredit Ellsberg in any way, shape, or form that they possibly could. And there is documented evidence that included up to and including an assassination of Ellsberg if needed. He had, going back to what I was talking about in terms of dealing with the politicians and whatnot, he had indicated to, it was William Fulbright and to George McGovern, that these documents would definitely prove that the administrations, both Republican and Democratic Party, had been lying to the American people the entire time, and that our efforts there were twofold. One, to contain China. And secondly, and this is one that I have believed for a long time, having seen evidence of it, coming out of Vietnam, the CIA, under the Phoenix program and whatnot, my gosh, they were making, billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars in the international drug trade, bringing some of the best dope out of Southeast Asia that they possibly could under an airline called American Airline, Air America. So they had, they could not afford to have the cover blown on this. Eventually it gets blown because the two newspapers refused to quit publishing it. And unfortunately, I think it's one of those things that, out of sight, out of mind. Kind of the American, what I think of when I'm dealing with my high school students is, your attention span is basically 15 minutes, and anything after that, I might as well be talking to myself. I think we suffer from that as a country. But it would be interesting to see just exactly how much has been continued on since Nixon. You stop and think about that, Arch. That's 50 years ago.
I know. It's scary, isn't it?
Not a whole lot has really changed, I don't think, in a lot of ways.
Dave, what did Nixon have the plumbers do to try to discredit Daniel Ellsberg?
They had him break in. He had them break into Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office. And they broke in, they ransacked through the files. When they found Ellsberg's file, they opened it, read it. Gordon Liddy was the lead guy on that, along with E. Howard Hunt. Mm-hmm. And when they found out that, there wasn't really anything there, they actually left Ellsberg's file open on the floor of the office of the psychiatrist. They were actually caught in the act of doing this as they were coming out of the office building. They were then arrested for a burglary. Nobody really knew, what else was going on here. And it was the Los Angeles Police Department. The guy's office was in L.A. And so they ended up spending the night in jail. They got a hold of Chuck Colson, who was acting as the counsel there for Nixon. And then they got a hold of Bob Haldeman, who was Nixon's chief of staff. And lo and behold, presidential, order went out, get these guys out of jail and do it right now. Mm. And so they, they went ahead and realized that, we didn't really have anything here. So when that information was brought into court, the U.S. district judge that was conducting the case, he threw out all the charges. In fact, he indicated that it was one of the most grievous miscarriages of justice in American history as to what the administration had tried to do to frame him over this. Now, all the charges were dismissed. That does not mean that they were not then kept under, under surveillance again. Wiretaps were put on, telephone calls were made to the National Security Council. How are we going to shut this guy up? The Watergate prosecutor was a guy named Bill Merrill. He was informed, Ellsberg that there had been a plot by Liddy and the plumbers to have 12 Cuban Americans who had previously worked for the CIA in the Bay of Pigs situation. Mm-hmm. Ellsberg appeared when he, to totally incapacitate Ellsberg when he appeared at a public rally. It's unclear whether they were meant to assassinate him or merely to hospitalize him. In his autobiography, literally, Liddy describes an Ellsberg neutralization proposal, as they were calling it, and that originated from Howard Hunt, which involved drugging Ellsberg with so much LSD by dissolving it in his soup. Can you imagine this? I mean, this goes back to the good old days of the CIA and the times that they were trying to assassinate Castro by you know, all these different things and whatnot, which kind of leads me to believe that it was still the Keystone Cops that were running this thing. According to Liddy, though, when the plan was finally approved, there was no longer enough lead time to get the Cuban waiters up from their Miami hotels to make it happen. So, you know, when you talk about when it was finally approved, all these different things that were finally approved, that had to end in only one place, and that was in the Oval Office.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Nixon was involved in this up to his eyebrows. Mm-hmm. You know, I would recommend people read Bob Haldeman's book. It's an incredible, incredible expose, not just on this particular case that we're talking about, but on Nixon all the way back to when he was a young congressman out of Whittier, California, and the different things that he did as vice president. I never realized it, but Nixon was actually the lead man on the assassination attempts against Castro when he was vice president. Mm. And Eisenhower just, you know, basically let him have at it. And, you know, to the day he died, you know, Nixon was firmly convinced that what he was doing was in the best interest of the United States. I guess history will have to be the judge of that.
And listeners, I'm telling you right now, we have some more shows coming up with Dave in the future about President Richard Nixon and Vietnam and its administration. Dave, I can remember when I was teaching, when I would teach the kids Watergate, that the reaction was, no, Mr. Hunter, this can't be true. This cannot be true. This cannot be true. It boggled these kids' mind that this is actually coming from the Oval Office, which still boggles my mind today, of what he allowed these men to do to other individuals just because of some information. It's scary, beyond scary.
It really is. And probably the one thing that kept him in the bullseye, so to speak, of the government officials was one of the documents that he released. Talked about a proposed 1958 nuclear attack on China over what was called the Taiwan Strait crisis. This was designed to be a first strike by the United States. In releasing that, you know, how do you just walk away from something like that? I mean, you know, it leads to what we were doing in Iran. I've got a list here, if I can run through it real quickly. And these were times Ellsberg wrote in his 1981 essay, a paper that he called the Call to Mutiny, that every president from Truman to Reagan, with the possible exception of Gerry Ford, has felt compelled to consider or direct serious preparation for possible imminent U.S. initiation of tactical or strategic nuclear warfare. I mean, stop and think about that. You know, I was on missile submarines for a number of years, and I know exactly what we are capable of doing. Mm-hmm. But I also know that that implies that there's not going to be a world worth coming home to.
Right.
Some of these threats were implicit. However, many were explicit. Many government officials and authors claim that those threats made major contributions to achieving important policy objectives. Ellsberg gave the following examples, and I'll just run through these real quickly. Truman, the Berlin blockade against the Soviet Union, China, Chinese intervention in the Korean War in October 1950, Eisenhower, the Korean War, Taiwan Strait crisis. He also indicated Ike was ready to use nuclear weapons if for the French at Dien Bien Phu in 54. Pointed to the Soviet Union at the Suez Crisis in 56, the 58-59 Berlin Airlift Crisis, Iraq to deter an invasion of Kuwait, in the 58 Lebanon crisis, Kennedy, Berlin crisis 61, Cuban Missile Crisis 62, Johnson, North Vietnam, Battle of Khe Sanh. Apparently Johnson was prepared to nuke him. Nixon to deter an attack on Chinese nuclear capability, the Indo-Pakistan War of 71, or the intervention in the 1973 Arab-Israeli War. And I remember that because I was a part of that particular aspect. 72, secret threats of massive escalation of the Vietnam War, including the use of nuclear weapons, the Indo-Pakistan War of 71. Gerry Ford, a lot of people don't remember or even know that we came very close to coming to war with North Korea over what was called the Korean Axe murder incident. Carter, already, you know, the CIA led Mujahideen against the Soviet Union, you know, where we recruited a guy by the name of Osama bin Laden to help take care of those things. Desert Storm, George W. Bush, H.W. Bush, Clinton, secret threats against the Iran nuclear and, you know, Libya's underground threats. And finally, George W. Bush and all the presidents and leading candidates since have basically had Iran and its nuclear program right in their sights. So, you know,
well,
it never seemed to stop for him. Unfortunately, Daniel was in February of this year, Ellsberg was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer and ended up dying about 2-3 months later. I think it was May 1st, if I remember right, in that time frame. But I mean, the guy to me is one of America's great heroes. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that because I was anti-war, because, you know, not being in the military that long, you know, the only people that think war is glorious, Arch, mm-hmm. are either total fools or people who have never been there. For absolutely those of us that have seen it up close, there's nothing glorious about it. You know, the fact that this guy probably saved us from total annihilation, I think should be a part of American history, but unfortunately, it doesn't make it into the end of the books. Let's see. He actually died in June. He was 92 years old.
What, Dave, what was, about 6 minutes left here, what was the reaction of the American people as these papers were being released to the Post and the New York Times? Was it evolutionary for a lot of people, or was it just glossed over by so many readers?
You know, I think it really was glossed over to a large extent, Arch, because, you know, by that point in time, you know, you were dealing with information that had happened, you know, several years earlier for the most part. I think people were, quite honestly, people were just tired of the war. They were tired of hearing about the war. If you remember 71, 72, 73 in that time frame, it was not a very popular time if you're in the military. I remember we were not allowed to wear our uniforms off base. We were not allowed to drive to and from home wearing our uniform because of the probability of, you know, creating an incident of some kind. I think the people just wanted to move on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at how we've approached our relationship with our representatives as well as with our executive branch since that time frame. I don't think that many people would, you know, if we were to sit down and have a college class today and you were to ask the question before you ever got started, okay, how many of you have heard of the Pentagon Papers?
Mm-hmm.
You'd get a few hands that
sure.
go up.
Yeah.
You know, how many of you that just raised your hand kind of thing can explain what they were about? You might have one or two. And I think that's indicative of our whole approach. We have become very cynical in terms of anything that might actually be, you know, a real direct threat. And I certainly believe that, you know, Russia is a direct threat, not because of the Russian people, but, you know, you're dealing with a guy, you know, Vladimir Putin. We need to stop and look at who his two self-declared heroes are in his life, Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin. You're not dealing with somebody that's playing with a full sea bag here.
Right.
You know, and those kinds of guys, if they have the ability, to have their fingers on nuclear weapons sooner or later, as Ellsberg indicated in his analysis. It's not a matter of if we are going to have a nuclear exchange at some point. It's just when and who's going to start it.
Very, very, very scary, sobering thought. As about 3 minutes, Dave, left, have we learned from Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, or things just continue on as status quo?
You know, I don't think that we've learned the important lessons from Vietnam. And to me, one of those most important lessons is this. If you're going to send young men and women into harm's way, and the actions or the events that are causing you to do that are so grievous, then you damn well better be ready to go the whole hog. Don't piecemeal it, and don't handcuff them. I remember very vividly standing in a combat zone and being a topside watch, officer of the deck, topside watch on a nuclear missile submarine in a port city in Korea. And we were not allowed to have bullets in our weapons. Rules of engagement are necessary. But if you're going to basically disarm your troops and then proceed to tell the rest of the world that you're doing that, don't even send them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. If you're going to send them, be prepared to take care of them when they get home, too. I just recently received a VA disability judgment. I've been fighting that disability judgment for over 40 years, trying to get that. We're still dealing with, well, we don't have any official record of your submarine being in this area these kinds of things. You know, really? I mean, that's the best you can do for America, you know, the best and brightest. One of my favorite days is, as you know, Arch, the Army-Navy game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, that is probably the Super Bowl as far as I'm concerned. But I stop and think after it's over, you know, what are these young men and women, what are we actually asking them to do for us? The fact that we have those young men and women that are willing to do that in spite of the apathy to a large part on the American public, it does give me some hope that, you know, the best and the brightest of the kids that I teach and you taught are basically our last hope. I tell my students that you guys need to be involved because, in my opinion, you're the last generation that's going to have an opportunity to fix this.
I agree. Dave, we need to stop right there on that note. It's a sobering note, but it's a positive note for the ability of the future for us as a country. So, Dave Stoll, thank you for again sharing today about the Pentagon Papers and Daniel Ellsberg, our involvement in Vietnam, and what has happened from that or because of that, and how so many things need to change with us as Americans. And listeners, I will reiterate that we look at these things not because we dislike America, it's because we love our country. And we don't want to continue to go down these roads where so many mistakes are made because we're dealing with human lives as a nation. So, Dave, it's sobering, and your two programs here are very sobering, scary. But, again, thank you for revealing so much of that so all of us can be educated to what's going on and how we can hopefully correct all that.
Well, Arch, it's been my pleasure, and it always is a pleasure to be involved with you and the radio station there. And I look forward to our next episode. We'll see if we can't put together something on Tricky Dick.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to have to, because if we don't, my wife won't let me rest. So again, thanks, Dave, again for coming. And again, thank you. Congratulations on your retirement in June. God bless you in your future endeavors. And I know that you're going to continue on in education, even though you're not in the classroom in June any longer. Thank you so much for coming.
You're very welcome, Orange. Thank you.